Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Irate Tireless Minority. I am Cal Fritzy of Ding In for Bella today as she continues to rest her voice. I have something here I want to discuss with you, and this is an article from Sultan Kanish, and it's regarding Islamic terrorism is over if we want it to be. As you may or may not know, I am a counter-jihadist, and I speak about the issues of Islam, hopefully from a coherent point of view. But this is a wonderful article that Daniel Greenfield wrote the other day, and it is, you know, it's true. If you want peace, you can have peace, but peace comes at a price. The National Intelligence Council has predicted that Islamic terrorism will end by 2030. Well, around the same time, we'll all be eating food pills, driving flying cars, and living entirely in an imaginary world. Now, by 2034, the last murder will have taken place, and by 2042, a scientific cure will be found for crime. By 2051, even bad thoughts will have been eliminated, and by 2062, work as we know it will be abolished, and everyone will mediate all day on the serious questions of life. Why are we here? What is our purpose in life? How can there be a National Intelligence Council so devoid of intelligence? In the real world, by 2030, there will be thousands of Emirates, many no more than small terrorist groups, but some of which control sizable territories. Some of these Emirates will pledge allegiance to a single caliphate like Islamic State. Others will try to get big enough to turn into their own caliphate. There will be hundreds of miniature Afghanistan caliphates, only to be fought by international peacekeeping forces composed of a combination of local forces and NATO troops that try to push out the bands of Salafi holy warriors and their pirate camps, brothels, and drug labs. There will be drones over the skies of 100 deserts fighting Toyota pickup trucks with a band of hooded men firing machine guns. There will be wire transfers from a dozen Islamic finance institutions wending their way from the great oil economies of the Persian Gulf, and American soldiers who have never seen a conventional war fought in their lifetime heading in on another rescue mission into the territory of a terror emirate. The United States of 2030 will fight some of these emirates, ignore others, and try to claim that some of them are moderate. Clinton tried to work with the Taliban. Obama backed the Brotherhood. By 2030, the smart men and women who got us into this will conclude that the best way to fight some of these caliphates and emirates is to pay them protection money to fight the other caliphates and emirates. We've already been doing that in Syria. Eventually, we'll begin doing it elsewhere and everywhere. What about what happened in Benghazi? Well, in Benghazi, Hillary Clinton was paying protection money to an Al-Qaeda ally for security. Today, Europe decided to pay protection money to the state sponsors of terror in Turkey. By 2030, we'll stop pretending that it's foreign aid and start calling it for what it is. Or maybe we'll go online to ourselves. Western countries are already paying their jizya as foreign aid, trading cash for the promise of stability. The United States and its allies have paid out fortunes to Afghan and Iraqi militias during the past two wars. And that doesn't even begin to take into account the sheer amount of money spent on development in the Muslim world. It is likely that the United States has spent more on jizya, the traditional protection money payment of the non-Muslim dhimmi to the Islamic State, than every other nation has throughout all of history. You know what, folks? And that's just the down payment on the big bill. Keep that in mind. It's getting dire out there, people. You know, back when the Marines first saw action against the Barbary pirates, remember that? I was there. Well, I wasn't really there, but it would have been interesting to be there, wouldn't it? But of course, if you are a dedicated historian, you would know about the Barbary pirates and how Thomas Jefferson formed the Marines, the Leathernecks, to fight the Barbary pirates. Now, back when the Marines first saw action against the Barbary pirates, most nations found it easier to pay than fight, but not Thomas Jefferson's. Jefferson's millions for defense, but not 1 cent for tribute. That's what set us apart. The Marines came into being because America decided to invest in defense instead of protection money. But defense today is so tangled with tribute, it's hard to tell the two apart, which is frightening to me, and it should be to you. I am telling you, there are countless such private deals that have been made already, and there will be countless more made to allow Western countries and their companies and NGOs to function in territory controlled by Islamic Emirates, and the territory will include international shipping lanes. If that doesn't scare you folks, I don't know what does. But we are paying a form of jizya. We do it every single day. All the way from foreign aid right down to patronizing an Islamic-owned business, a corner store. We're paying the jizya. By 2030, most countries will have come to view Islamic terrorism as a strategic asset, the way that Saudi Arabia does. They will recognize that the only way to transform the strategic liability of Muslim terrorism into an asset is by funding it and aiming it at their enemies. Islamic militias will gain valuable experience, training, and weapons by serving as the barbarian armies of a decaying West that they will use to conquer the West the way that Goth ancestors of Westerners did. The America of 2030 will spend nearly as much trying to buy off the Muslim world as it will be spending on trying to kill the terrorists. We will continue financing the terrorism that we are trying to prevent while appeasing our killers. American soldiers will be stationed around the world in 100 little undeclared wars, building generators for sullen villagers, before coming under fire from them. The wars will be endless. Both sides will hate it and will perpetuate it anyway. Now imagine the conflicts of the Cold War if instead of Moscow, there had been 1,000 decentralized communist dictatorships across the world with no central enemy to fight. And if Viet Cong were coming out of Oakland. Imagine the drug war if the drug lords were aspiring feudalists fighting for a world government that would turn us into their serfs. Imagine World War II if the Nazis were a religion that anyone could convert to and immediately become a member of the master race with the right to rob, rape, and kill anyone from the inferior breeds. You know what? You don't have to wait, though, until 2030. You don't have to wait that long to see the world, because that world is already here. By 2030, Europe will be a police state, fighting terrorism by eliminating privacy, deploying soldiers in every city, and criminalizing dissent. The European Union police state will be able to access the contents of any mobile device at a click. Every speech that is still permitted today will lead to prison sentences at worst or at best, mandatory re-education at special centers organized to combat extremism. The bombs will still keep going off, but they will be a nuisance. Europeans will learn to adapt to the occasional suicide bombing the way that Israelis have. A bomb will go off. The survivors will be carted away. The broken glass will be swept up, and the television will praise the refusal to give in to extremism and hatred while prominently featuring the half-hearted condemnation of a local cleric. To Emirates. The authorities will make deals with the local gangs who will act as Islamist militias. There will be lashes and honor killings in the formal setting of Islamic law, and no one will pay attention. Urban and suburban enclaves will eventually become indistinguishable from Gaza. By 2030, the first crude homemade rocket, made with plans offered on the internet, may rise into the Parisian sky aimed at the Eiffel Tower. But there will be immediate, half-hearted condemnations. Like Europe, the United States will operate a paranoid surveillance state that its critics decry, even while both the state and its critics support the migration that makes it mandatory. There will be terrorist attacks, some thwarted, some not, including possibly one big one, when an Islamic terror group finally gets its hands on chemical or nuclear weapons from one of the Islamic states. The America of 2030 will sink half its intellectual capital into praising Islam, while the other half will be spent trying to find more elegant ways to kill Muslim terrorists. Homo Americanus circa 2030 will be a veteran of 24 wars in the Muslim world and of 2,000 television programs, museum exhibits, books, movies, and high school classes celebrating Islamic religion and culture. Western leaders, like their Asian Roman counterparts, have come to admire the virtues of the savage more than the virtues of their own civilization. By 2030, it will be clearer than ever whether the outcome of their bloody, half-hearted campaigns to civilize the savages with doses of democracy and civic institutions will have led to civilized savages or the savaging of civilization. Is this world of 2030 inevitable? No, it's not. Because we don't have to live this way, but we choose to. Remember in 1969, John Lennon and Yoko Ono put up billboards with the message, "War is over if you want it," to protest against the Vietnam War. Will terrorism end by 2030? It will, if we want it to. There are two sure ways to end a war, either by winning it or by losing it. The world's most famous cokehead and mental patient duo met the latter when they offered their Viet Cong Christmas greetings. But winning wars is still an option. It just isn't the option that we've chosen. That's funny. World's most famous cokehead and mental patient, John and Yoko. But you know what? The hearts and minds way of war will take us to the 2030 that has been described. And that 2030 will take us to 2060 and 2090, where the war is over because we lost. If we want our civilization to end there, all we have to do is to keep on doing what we're doing. We know how to win wars. We don't lack the tools or the skills. We lack the conviction. We aren't trying to win the hearts and minds of the enemy because we know we're right. It's a strategy born of a lack of confidence. We don't believe in ourselves. We need the enemy to affirm our morality. The United States does not lose wars except when it loses the conviction and unity of its purpose. To win, we have to believe that we have a nation, a culture, and a people worth protecting. The enemy believes that. It believes that enough to destroy us. If we believed it, the war would already be over. Islamic terrorism is over if you want it. We have the power and the skill to end it at any time. What we lack is the faith in that we are worth fighting for. And I would like to thank Daniel Greenfield for that article. And I'll put the link in the chat room for you folks so that you can bookmark that and read it again, because it's well worth your time. And there we are. I put the link in there for you. It very much is true, though, you know, folks. We are worth fighting for. Absolutely worth fighting for. We are Western nations of virtue. We have histories of democracy. We follow the golden rule. There is absolutely no reason why we are not worth fighting for. Look at what we have created. We have created a Western ideology that has served us well, in that we are inherently peaceful, loving people. Nobody likes war. Of course not. But there is a war going on right now. And that war is Islam. We did not ask for this war. We did not declare this war. But we are all the same at war, because Islam declared war on us. We do not have to tolerate Islam whatsoever. Not by a long shot. But we're turning into nations of appeasers. as Mr. Greenfield so eloquently said in his article. We are paying the jizya just to keep the peace. There will never be peace when it comes to Islam. Islam is a cancer that must be eradicated. And if we don't act now, what will happen in 2030? There's a really good comment in here by Edward Klein, and he said it isn't a matter of faith. It's a matter of confidence in the life-affirming value of what we fight for. Exactly. There is no reason. There is no rationale for our appeasement methodology. There is absolutely no reason why we have to tolerate mega mosques sprouting up in the United States or Canada or the United Kingdom or Australia or anywhere else. There is no reason why we have to tolerate textbooks like World History and Common Core Curriculum, where the majority of the book is dedicated to the virtues of Islam being taught to our students, our children, in our schools. There is absolutely no reason why we have to tolerate the behaviorisms of our elected officials. There is no reason why we cannot remind our politicians that they work for us. We hired them via our vote on the ballot. Politicians must remember that. They have to remember that they are servants of the people. People like Hillary Clinton, who thinks that she is above repute, is acting like she is an empress. And that's something else too, folks. This election in the United States is probably going to be the most important election in recent history. And there are going to be some really tough choices that you are going to have to make. Who do you want in your White House, the People's House? Do you think Hillary Clinton is going to put an end to the Islamization of the West? Tibet? Are you kidding me? She's killing those who are trying. You got Donald Trump. He talks a tough talk when it comes to Islam, but will he act on his rhetoric, which it is beginning to sound like? What about Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio? What do you think America will look like under the leadership of these individuals? You really got to think hard about that. Think really hard about what you want in a leader. And will that leader put an end to Islam? Islam could have ended 1,400 years ago, but it was appeased all the way from Mecca to Medina. The ideology of Islam is so far-flung and so outrageous, but we appease it. Each and every day we appease it. Like I aforementioned, everything from foreign aid to patronizing the corner store. We pay for them to continue to kill us. And that is exactly what they're doing. You saw what happened in Brussels this last week. You saw what happened in Pakistan over the Easter holiday weekend. Christians celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And they were killed, slaughtered by Mohammedans. Something else I don't get, you know. How is it that a man of military fighting age can strap on a suicide vest, look a child in the eye, and kill him in the most horrific manner possible? That is Islam. This is what we're up against. This ideology is so soul-sucking, so all-consuming. It is an entity we will never, ever understand, nor shall we be obligated to do so. But we do have an obligation to ourselves, and that is to reclaim who we are. Loving individuals who follow the golden rule. We have a right to take our countries back. And God willing, we will. And I'm down to 3 minutes. This time flew. I am honored and thrilled to sit in for Belen while she recovers. I am Kel Fritzi of Red Fox Radio and the Radio Jihad Network. I want to thank you for joining the program. Thank you so much, Bigfoot, and Jenna and Gary, Major Dave, and of course, Call Me Mom, for giving me the opportunity to act as her guest co-host. And just to let you know, yep, I'm on the dial too. Thanks, Mom, I will. You can hear me Mondays and Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Red Fox Radio, heard right here on Blog Talk Radio and other devices. You can also hear Tim Burton and myself Mondays over there. And on Tuesdays at the Radio Jihad Network, we are The Infidels Are Watching. And thank you so very much to Call Me Mom once again. I'm Kel Fritzi. Thank you so much for joining the program.
Broken me, my own.